If I could publish something out there that would get in front of President Biden, what would you want to say?
Please reunite me with my family.
Mark Fogel is an international teacher from Oakmont. Until fall of 2021, the 63-year-old traveled to various countries teaching history. In August of 2021, Mark was detained in Russia for the possession of 17 grams of medical marijuana. The drug was prescribed legally to Fogel in Pennsylvania for his back and knee pain. He is currently serving a 14-year sentence in a Russian penal colony. His family has taken up the call to urge POTUS to bring him home. To his family's disappointment, President Biden has yet to even address Mark by name. Last week, TribLive was able to sit in on a call between Mark and his 95-year-old mother, Malfine. Hello, Pittsburgh. This is TribLive's From the Newsroom, bringing you top stories from TribLive.com. I'm Zach Gibson, and here to tell me about this experience and more of Fogel's story is community engagement editor and opinion columnist, Lori Falls. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Thank you for joining me today.
I am happy to be here.
Okay, so let's get into this story. Tell me about the background for the listeners who aren't familiar. Tell us about Mark Fogel's story.
Mark Fogel has been a teacher for most of his life. In fact, he's been an international teacher for most of his life. His mother told me that he did his student teaching internationally, and that's been his life ever since. So from college, this is what he started out doing. He's been a teacher in Russia, and it was in August of 2021. So we're coming up on 3 years since his arrest at the airport in Moscow. And he took he had his medical marijuana with him, which was legally prescribed. Is it legal in Russia? It is not. But he had it for a reason. He had it for a medical reason, and he had his medical documentation with him for it. Just like you would have, you know, like if he had been prescribed Vicodin. There are also issues with taking Vicodin into Russia.
Right.
And he would have needed his prescription and everything the same way. I think that's important for people to realize that this was not recreational that was being taken in. There would have been just as much of a problem with him taking almost any prescription drug in.
Right. And he did have had this prescribed for a very substantial reason, correct?
Right. He has profound spinal injuries. I have seen documentation of them. We have copies of the x-rays that were taken in Russia in 2012 or 2013, a year after he started teaching there. But his first spinal surgery was in 1991, which was funny because his dates are based on Pittsburgh sports like incidents. Because when he was talking to his mom, he's like, "You remember, Mom, the Penguins had just won the cup." And I'm like, "Okay."
What made you want to do a story on Fogel right now?
Right now, there has been a lot of talk about Brittany Griner, because she's on a book tour right now telling her story about her time in a Russian prison. But there's also, because of the war in Ukraine, there's a lot of attention on Gershkovich and Wellen. Evan Gershkovich is the Wall Street Journal reporter who was arrested last year. Paul Wellen was arrested in, I want to say 2019, might be 18. His detention predates Mark's by a couple of years. And then there are all of the hostages being held in, Gaza. So there is a lot of conversation about getting people back.
Right.
But the person that you never hear the U.S. government talk about is Mark Fogel, the person who was there to teach children. He wasn't just there to teach children. He was there teaching diplomats' children in Russia. That's what he was doing. One of the few people who ever mentions his name is the former ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul. He will, whenever he is doing an interview with someone and they bring up Gershkovich or Wellen or Griner, he will interject Fogel's name to make sure that he is part of the conversation. But he is the only one who is doing that.
Wow. So while you were putting together and researching for the story, I understand that you came to meet Fogel's mother, Malfine. Can you tell me about what that experience was like?
Malphine Fogel is, she's adorable. She reminds me so much of my grandmother. It's painful. She is this tiny little woman, but she just like radiates strength. She's 95 years old and she is absolutely on, and she is committed to getting her son home. And if I were Putin, I would not want to be alone in a room with her, because I think she'd take him. Her living room is just this little jewel box of perfectly maintained, you know, beautiful little sofas, beautiful paintings on the wall, and her rosary that hangs like right on the lamp next to her phone, which I think really speaks about how much her faith and that phone are tied together.
Yes.
Because that phone is her lifeline to her son.
Mm. He's always been so family oriented, you know, that it's really important to him.
Yeah.
And of course, my parents came from Italy, and he visited there a number of times, and he's had people from Italy write to the government.
Okay.
He's got people
every
all
little
over.
Bit help.
You went to Malphine's to have a conversation, just getting some information and meeting her.
Right. I didn't go for an interview. I went to have a conversation with her. I was working on the idea of a story. But I wanted her to get to know me and to realize that she could trust me, because this family has been doing this for almost 3 years.
Right.
And they are afraid of, you know, they want to make sure that they are doing the right thing for Mark. But they also have to be careful about what they're doing, because they don't want to do anything that is going to make his life more difficult in prison.
Absolutely.
And they don't want to do anything that is going to, they want to encourage having him brought home. Mm. But they don't want to do anything that's going to upset someone and make that less of a priority. It's really a tightrope that they're walking. Mm. So I went in and said, I am not here for an interview. I'm here to talk to you, to get to know you, to hear what you want, to get out there. And then we can talk about doing an interview after that. Mm. But I went in without, I left my notebook in the car. I didn't even bring in a pen, you know. And I was there for a few minutes. And his mother said, you're like, no, we can do the interview. Go ahead. I was like, okay, I'll go out to get my notebook from the car. And she was like, oh, I've got paper. You don't have to go inside. I was like, no, Malphine, that's fine. I'll just go out to my car. So I ran out. I got my notebook and my pen. I came back inside, and we were talking. And all of a sudden, the phone rang. And she looked down and she was like, I have to take this. It's Mark. He hasn't called in 2 weeks. So she had been going for 2 weeks without hearing anything from him.
Wow.
And all of a sudden he called while I was there. So I was like, absolutely. You take it.
Right.
You go.
So this surprise call from Mark after 2 weeks of not hearing from him, is this something that is a regular routine for Malphine and Mark?
She gets calls from the embassy. That's how, like through the embassy, that's how she knew that it was from him. And so it's kind of like, if you have somebody who's in jail in Allegheny County,
right,
you're going to get a call that has a recording that says, this is Allegheny County Jail. Do you accept this call? You know, and it's the same kind of process, but it's a little more convoluted because it's going through the State Department.
Right.
So he doesn't have access to a phone all the time. He only has it, you know, occasionally when there's something that comes up. And apparently there had just been a problem with phones over the last couple of weeks, which is why she hadn't been able to talk to him.
Right.
But she gets the call, she answers it, and there's somebody from like the embassy or the State Department who's on there who says, this is, you know, the State Department or the embassy, and we have a call from a Russian prison with Mark Fogel. Will you accept the call? And she said, of course. I can't imagine having to wait through that all the time just to hear my son's voice.
What was it like, that conversation between Mark and Malphine?
it's interesting because on the one hand, it was a very simple phone call, the kind of thing that you would expect to hear between a mom and her kid talking about, like, she's like, she told him like where the pirates stand. She's like, they're just 3 out of 500. You'd be happy. You know, they're still in it. So obviously they're a family that believes in hope if they think that the pirates are going to pull anything out. She talked about how much he loves sports, particularly Pittsburgh sports, and that he misses our sports page, actually.
I really missed reading your sports page. If I could just read that, the Union Review sports page, I would be very happy.
Both of them would kind of alternately get a little, like, choked up. And they were trying not to. And it was like they were both trying to hold things together. They didn't want the call to end. They wanted to keep talking with each other. But it was hard for both of them. And they were both trying to be strong for the other one.
So Trib Live gets a chance to have a conversation and hear what it is like for Mark at the colony. Can you tell me about what Mark had to say?
The prison that he's in has a small church on it. And it's not like a like church, as far as it's kind of a house that has a building that has some icons in it so that people can go.
There's a little church here that is on this colony, and it's really quite small, but really beautiful.
He goes there on a regular basis. He goes there like pretty much every day. He does the walk to stretch his leg,
right,
so that his knee injury can kind of get, you know, like limbered up a little bit. But he also goes there because the icons he spoke about, one of the icons is his name, Saint Mark.
Saint's my name, Saint Mark, and you know, there's ones of Mary and Jesus, and you know, they're just really quite beautiful, and it's a place that I kind of find refuge in.
They speak to his faith and they help him kind of focus.
Right.
And okay. they give him hope. And he's in a place where hope is not just thick on the ground.
Right. In the recording that we have, he talks about being thankful for the little things.
Of, you know, thanking little things of, you know, I'm alive, I have a great family.
He tries to give thanks every day. He talks about the mantra of getting through and how he tries to be thankful for the fact that he's still alive, that the fact that his mother is still alive, that his family is okay,
right,
and you know that they're not in Russia with him.
And you know, then I sort of like ask for help, and I say, you know, please give me strength and faith and patience. You know, please look over my mom. Please have mercy on my family.
And he focuses on that. He just tries to, he repeats this mantra about how he just wants to be reunited. That's all he wants out of, you know, everything in life. All he wants is to be back with his family.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I have the ability to go into this church and have this time. It's quite helpful for me, and it gives me things that I need.
Later on in the conversation, I believe you ask him how his pain is, and he gives a little bit more of a description of what he deals with on a daily basis.
I actually have chronic pain myself. I have fibromyalgia, so I could really identify with the way that he described his pain, because when I asked him...
Well, you know, that's always a hard thing for me to describe, because it's something that I've lived with for such a long period of time that, you know... You can't dwell on it because it ruins your being.
Right.
And, you know, I've always been accused of being overly optimistic in my life. And, you know, I have to manage that and try to move on with it, but, you know.
Unless you have lived with chronic pain, it's difficult for people to grasp what this thing is that is omnipresent. And when you take medication, you know it's not taking away your pain. It's going to make it possible to get through this period of time with pain that's blunted just enough for you to function. He tries to do what he can. The reason that he takes medical marijuana, that he had that prescribed, was because he had seen friends. He had people who had taken opioids who were negatively affected by that, you know, like addiction. And, you know, he did not want to go through all of those problems that we know have created an epidemic. They've created an epidemic here. There's an epidemic in Russia. It's almost impossible to get opioid medication in Russia prescribed. Mark opted for medical marijuana to avoid those problems with other ways.
Right.
And he was trying to manage his pain with things like massage and with hot water, you know, baths and showers and things like that. Mm. Other ways to try and treat his knee, treat his back, make it a livable situation, if not a, you know, pain-free situation, which is doesn't seem to be something that he expects. Mm. He's just trying to get through.
I mean, as my mother, you know, I have serious physical limitations that I need to manage, and managing those things is difficult under the best of conditions with massage, hot water, and things.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, under these conditions, I have the ability to do some stretching and things, but it's not
the same.
What I would like to have, let's put it that way.
Those things that he relied on, it's not just the marijuana that he doesn't have access to. He doesn't have access to the massage. He doesn't have access to just something as simple as a hot water bath. Brittany Griner, in her interviews with Robin Roberts and Joy Reid, has talked about how it was cold all the time, that it was just icy cold. And that was hard for her. She was taking medical marijuana for chronic pain as well from her basketball injuries.
Here they've given me medicines. It's not like they've, you know, let me rot and, you know, they try to help me. But I mean, you know, what I deal with is, you know, spinal injuries or profound injuries, and, you know, there's nerve damage and there's numbness, and, you know, my balance is not as good as it should be, I don't think. And so, I mean, those are just things that I have to deal with in life.
Although he has said that he is being treated to some extent by the doctors, they have done what they can, but it's not what he needs, obviously.
In the conversation, he also talks about just simply wanting to get home. And I know that this topic is something that has been complicated on both Mark and his family's end here in the U.S. The family called for the U.S. and specifically President Biden to find a way to get to secure Mark's freedom and get him home. Can you tell me about some of the ways that they've done that?
The family is working very proactively. They've created a website with articles that have been published about him. They've created a hashtag, Free Mark Fogel, to get that out there. And so that, you know, like if anybody is sharing one of the articles that is done about him, hopefully they share it with the hashtag so that it creates buzz.
I need help. That's all there is to it. And
absolutely.
You know, if some people can get released, then let's, you know, get us 63-year-old teacher, you know, who's firmly middle class. You see where I'm from, Butler, PA.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I got, you know, major entities on my side like other people do. I'm, you know, the main street guy that I would like to have help and whatever they can do. I plead for it. I beg for it.
When Cheryl Reiner, Brittany's wife, was talking about like the efforts to get him home, one of the things that she said was she wanted to get everyone talking about it because a lot of whispers creates a lot of noise.
Right.
And that is very much the same narrative that the family, that the Fogle family is going for. They need to have a lot of people talking about Mark's case to get like kind of the background noise of it loud enough to reach the people that can help bring him home.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about the coverage that we've done so far before we move on?
We've covered like a lot of things about the case as it has evolved. Since we found out about it, we have covered it consistently whenever anything has happened. When he was convicted, it was in 22 at any rate, and that's when he was sentenced to 14 years at a Russian penal colony, which basically is 14 years of hard labor in a difficult, difficult prison. We've covered efforts that have been done at different times to bring him home, like letter writing campaigns to, you know, like try and let him know that people were still in his
prison. Knowing I have support. It's a tremendous asset.
There was a, there have been events in Pittsburgh that have come up. But my job, community engagement editor, is a very fancy way of saying opinion editor. Mm. I curate the opinion page. I write editorials. And I have made it my goal that we will have a consistent presence on the opinion page in the editorials calling for his release until he is home. Whenever something happens in the world that relates to people being detained, I want to have Mark Fogle part of the conversation. So when the Navalny documentary
right.
won an Oscar, we wrote an editorial. When Gershkovich was arrested, we wrote an editorial. When President Biden let the State of the Union go ahead, mentioned both Gershkovich and Wellen's names in that speech, the most important speech he gives every year.
Right.
And he mentioned them, and he did not mention Mark Fogle. We wrote an editorial on that, and that will not stop until, at the very least, until Mark Fogle's name is mentioned in these conversations. Or more likely, I intend to continue writing these editorials until he is home with his mother.
If I could publish something out there that would get in front of President Biden, what would you want to say?
Please reunite me with my family.
Right. Okay. Now, throughout our conversation, we've alluded to a similar case of Brittany Griner. I would like you to point out some of the similarities between Mark and Brittany's cases, and then tell me about what Mark had to say.
Brittany Griner is a WNBA basketball star who was arrested in 2022. Mark had marijuana, actual marijuana. She had cannabis oil for like a vape that was prescribed for exactly the same reasons, because Mark's body is, you know, like battered from, you know, like just spinal injury and these pins and surgeries that he's had. Her body has been beat up by basketball, by, you know, decades of playing
right.
a game that, you know, she's very good at. The pain is very similar, mm-hmm. you know, like pain doesn't care whether you're famous or not.
Right.
So she had the same thing. She was arrested at the same airport. And she was convicted of having the marijuana, in this case, cannabis oil, the same way he was. She was given 9 years. And the thing that made the difference in her case was that everyone knew who she was. She's also, it's underestimated. People know who she is here. She was also famous in Russia. Mm. Like, she had been playing there, you know, for a few years. She was very popular.
Mm-hmm.
She talked in her book and in her interviews about how everybody knew her there. And her case just mirrors Mark's in every way. And the only difference is that she got to come home. She was part of the conversation. She was not even just part of the conversation. She was a priority for the conversation.
Right.
Malfine did not watch the Griner interviews mm-hmm. when they aired because there's concern that it would be too difficult for her to know how bad
right.
the prison was. Mm. She knows it's bad. She doesn't need to know the gory details of exactly how bad. And I understand that.
Right, of course.
Because she was in the negotiations that were talked about were for both her and Wellen,
mm-hmm.
Paul Wellen, who's an ex-Marine who was charged with espionage.
Mm.
And Wellen, she expected Wellen to be on the plane with her when she was finally released in December of 2022, and he wasn't. Mm. Mark had hoped that he would be on that plane too, and he wasn't either. But he doesn't begrudge her that. The family doesn't, they're not upset that Brittany Griner got to come home.
Right.
They are, Mark is upset. Upset, I'm sure is accurate, but he never said he was upset. He just wants to understand why, if it was possible to bring her home, it isn't possible to bring him home.
One of the mantras that I repeat over and over and over every day at the church, in bed, whenever I have time. And, you know, there are other people here. And, you know, if, you know, our First Amendment or the Declaration of Independence speaks of, you know, we're, all men are created equal and they're endowed by their creators certain inalienable rights, among those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that, you know, let's kind of use those lofty words to help all of us that are here. And if it can be done with some, it can be done with others. And I plead for him for help.
Mm-hmm.
If it was possible to have conversations about her, and it's now possible to have conversations about Evan Gershkovich, which they absolutely should be having.
Mm-hmm.
There should be conversations every single day about bringing Evan Gershkovich home, bringing Paul Wellen home. But there should also be conversations about Mark Fogel. And those conversations are not openly happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, what else to say. You know, I'm trying not to fault anybody here. I'm just trying that, please bring me home.
I see in the three cases of Gershkovich, Wellen, and Griner, all three were designated as wrongfully detained. Can you tell us a little bit about what that designation means?
Wrongfully detained it's a specific thing that the State Department has identified reasons that this person's arrest meets a certain criteria for them to be involved in it. You know, mm-hmm. like if you commit murder in France and they just hold you accountable for killing someone in France, that doesn't necessarily mean that the U.S. State Department is going to get involved to this way. If it's clear that you actually did the crime, you know, that you committed this crime, and that there is no political reason for you to be detained, then the State Department will be there on your behalf the way that they would be for anyone, but they're not going to intervene and say that this is out of hand. If your U.S. citizenship is a factor, however, if it's a contributing part to why you are being detained, that's a different kettle of fish. And the State Department has on their website right now a warning for everyone to not go to Russia. They are warning people, you could be arrested really just because you're an American. And if that happens, there's nothing that we can do about it. If they are warning people that that is going to happen, I do not know how they can say that Mark Fogel is not wrongfully detained. Did he have something that the Russians didn't want him to have? Yes, he did. But that does not mean that there was not still a wrongful detention aspect to his case.
Right.
And it cannot start and stop with the possession of marijuana for him if it didn't start and stop with the possession of marijuana for Brittany Griner. They recognized that there was a larger aspect to her detention, and there is absolutely the same aspect to Mark Fogel's.
As of right now, Fogel is yet to receive that designation, and when we searched for answers, we found that the State Department has consistently declined for comment. My final question for you today, Lori, is do you think it's likely that we see that we soon see an expedited release for Mark Fogel in a manner that resembles Griner's?
I don't know if it is likely, because obviously we don't know what is being discussed behind the scenes. All we can speak to is what is spoken about openly. And the State Department comments, you know, like anytime they are asked a question in a public forum, they answer questions about Evan Gershkovich. They answer questions about Paul Whelan. When I regularly ask questions of the State Department, I was just actually denied this week an interview with someone from the State Department. What they do is they will accept questions from me, and then they will send answers back. And the answers, which early on were answering my questions, at this point, they are basically a form letter that says, we address each of these issues on a individual basis. We will not discuss them. Aside from that, we appeal to the Russian government to release Mark on humanitarian grounds. I have gotten like those three sentences back almost verbatim the last, I don't know, six times that I have contacted the State Department. They, aside from not saying Mark's name, they're not even, you know, really responding to questions about his condition at this point, about his case overall. It is a rubber stamp answer. And as long as there is not that whisper, those building whispers to force a larger conversation, I don't know when Mark would get home. I don't know. There is a resolute campaign from the Wall Street Journal to bring Gershkovich home, as there should be. There absolutely should be. The Whelan family has gone to meet with the president. Everyone needs to know that there is another person there. And there are others, too. There are other people who are there. And by not talking about Mark's case and not making Mark a priority to bring home and drawing this veil over the process, it just makes it more dangerous and more scary for other people to get caught up in this net that they're not talking about.
You know, the First Lady is an educator.
I know. An asset.
No, there should be an asset for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, we share the same love of trying
It was great that this happened.
We're on the weekend, Mom.
Okay.
And I'll let you get back to the conversation.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love you.
Well, Lori, thank you for bringing such a impactful story and helping to share Mark's message today. For these and more stories, please visit triblive.com. Once again, I'm Zach Gibson, and this is From the Newsroom.